Hello and welcome to the Industry Leaders podcast, where we talk to the leaders of some of the most exciting retail and direct brands and learn the real stories behind their success, their challenges and their plans for the future. I'm Sarah Coboyle and this podcast is brought to you by More2, the marketing science people. My guest this week is an MBE, a two-time author, multiple award winner, founder of Not on the High Street and currently managing partner of the brilliant women's wear brand Busby & Fox. Sophie Cornish, it's such a treat to have you here. How are you doing?
Oh, Serica, it's absolutely lovely to be with you. I'm great. I'm feeling really good today. We are getting back into normal life, aren't we? And it's just Such pleasure.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I don't know if it's just me, but this summer just feels like everything is just wide open. You could do anything.
Sun has actually been shining.
Yes. Yeah, makes such a difference.
Yeah, no, I'm good. And how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm great. I'm really excited about this episode. So I think we'll get into Busby & Fox in a minute or two. I'd like to kind of start by winding back the clock back to 2006 when you founded Not on the High Street with Holly Tucker. It was an unusual kind of business to be creating at that time, I think. Can you tell me a little bit what your vision was for the business and what you wanted to achieve with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, we felt quite like pioneers at the time.
Yeah.
It was actually 2005 that we kind of first had the idea. And if you think that, I think Twitter was founded something like 2005, 2006, Facebook 2004. So these were really, you know, early days. About the vision for Not on the High Street, well, we talked about a perfect storm in terms of what was happening at the time. There was obviously the kind of appetite and the kind of bounty of these beautiful handmade products around. People were making unique things as small businesses, things that you could have made sort of to order or customized. And that felt like quite a, you know, not exactly a new thing, but a kind of surge of that kind of product. At the same time as the high street was just looking pretty bleak, there were, you know, 6 mobile phone shops in every high street, and the small businesses that we loved needed the best outlet, really. It was hard for them to get seen, wonderful as they were. So, yeah, we just decided that we wanted to find a way to bring the customer who really wanted these products together with the makers who were creating such incredible, unique things. And digital just seemed the way to do it. So we decided that we were going to create this online marketplace. We did both have digital backgrounds. We had both worked in, this is Holly Tucker, my business partner and I. So we both worked in digital backgrounds before, but in many, many ways, it was very new to us. But yeah, we wanted to bring together that magic and put it online. And so we just, you know, sat down, wrote a business plan, started at our kitchen table, and kind of the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah. And were there any hairy moments in the early days?
Oh, gosh. Many. Many. We had a very difficult time with technology. You know, I think it's well known now probably that we didn't quite get what we expected with our very first platform. And we had a very scary first launch date when the technology that we'd been planning to launch, and we'd set up this whole, you know, we'd told the press and got publicity and announced it to all our, you know, we'd been accumulating a database and we announced it to our customers. We had no concept of beta, really. We just kind of jumped in and did it. And, you know, the night before we launched, the technology just was not working. So we kind of crafted this idea of a competition and turned it into a kind of preview and come and visit us and register and win money to shop on the site later. And we had just had no idea whether people were going to come to the site or not. And if they were they just going to run away again because we weren't actually delivering what we'd hoped to deliver. And there was just this wonderful moment. It was like a movie where we watched the screen as people did come to the site and register and say how much they loved it. And honestly, there was just thousands and thousands and thousands of people registering. And, you know, we'd spun it. We've made it into a success. So, yes, definitely some hairy moments, but they mostly turned into very happy moments.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And because you were there for quite a long time, I think you've kind of left in 2018, is that right?
Yes, the business was sold last year, so I'm not with the business at all.
Yeah. And was it hard for you to leave?
Hard to leave. I mean, gosh, yes, absolutely. Very hard to leave. I think all kind of jobs are hard to leave. I love work. I just love work. I love office life. I love my teams. Wherever I am, I have happy, fond memories of every single place I work. So it's always hard. I think when you've built up something from scratch like that and been through so much, I think lots of founders would say it's like a third child. And for me, with having two already, it's a very kind of unique bond that you have with your business. But that said, you know, it is a little bit, again, like having a child, you know, your greatest triumph really is when they successfully grow up and move on and leave you and you let go. And that's kind of exactly what happened. And I was excited to do new things. It was, of course, a bit mixed, a bit bittersweet.
Yeah, I'm sure a huge mix of emotions. And that kind of brings us on quite nicely. What was it about Busby and Fox that kind of caught your attention or piqued your attention?
Yeah, I mean, so many things, really. It was, you know, part of them kind of quite personal and part about the business and kind of where that intersected, really. As I was sort of reducing my day-to-day involvement with Not on the High Street, my husband and I bought a lovely home down in Devon and started to spend more time down there. We'd always had roots down there. My mother grew up there, et cetera, et cetera. But we started to spend more time down there. And Emma Vowles, who's the founder of Busby and Fox, was already a great friend and was running the business with her husband, Felix. And we just started talking more and more, really. And I'm a little bit compulsive with businesses generally. I kind of, you know, can't just itch to get involved and see how you can kind of make the magic even greater. So, yeah, I kind of started talking to Emma and Felix about how perhaps I could help them to grow or to do things to make the business kind of more what they wanted and fulfill their dreams for the business. And I guess it was also an opportunity for me to get back to fashion. Before Not on the High Street, I'd worked for 20 years or so in magazines and the cosmetics industry and in advertising. So cosmetics and beauty and fashion had been my world and I missed it. I really missed it. So there was that for me too. But why particularly Busby and Fox? Many things. Emma's brand of magic is just something to behold. It really is. She's one of the most engaging, talented, creative people you could ever have the good fortune to meet. And customers just love her and what she brings to their lives in terms of, you know, how they dress and how she shares in personal experience with them and how she kind of makes one feel confident and able to kind of experiment and so on. She just has a real magic there. So I knew that there was something there that we could make more of within the business. But then more kind of from a commercial point of view, I was reaching my 50s. In fact, I think I was just sort of turned 50. I'd realised that women of my age had become rather kind of invisible, neglected group of women, which is crazy because half the population is over 50 and they hold around 40% of the nation's entire household wealth. And of course, half of those people are women and they're just being neglected as consumers. I think any research you find will tell you that sort of 45%, 50% of women of that age feel they kind of just become vanished from public life as they get older and reach menopause and so on. But in many ways, actually, this is a really great time to be a woman. We're pleasing ourselves again. We're free of some of the worries and responsibilities of our 30s and 40s. We're doing new things, enjoying more time to ourselves and building either new or, you know, re-involving ourselves in our careers. Women are working for longer because we're living longer, of course. And, you know, it might be because we need to and it might be because we want to, but that's often what we're doing. And within all of that, we're dressing for ourselves and our careers, but this time choosing clothes probably more purely to make ourselves happy and express who we are. But in fashion, there's just this big gap in the market. And although, there are brands, you know, I'm a shopaholic and I know there are brands everywhere for me, but the ones that where I really feel I belong in that kind of aspect of my life, I think at Busby and Fox, we are really enjoying bridging that gap right alongside our customers and kind of creating an environment and our own label collection of clothes that we know works for them. And I think that is what really drew me to the business and made me feel there was something very special that I personally wanted to engage with there. And then, of course, because I'd grown a business before, I felt that I could maybe help them in ways that, you know, introduce ways of working or new developments or strategy or whatever that could help them. So I felt I could bring something to the party, as it were.
That's fantastic. Well, you can really just hear the passion, the excitement in your voice. I love it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I do. I just love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I'd love to know, you know, what do you want your customer to feel when she walks into your store?
Well, I guess exactly that, really. Like I do, I'm not in the office every day, so I do still feel like a customer myself. So that means feeling very special, the most important person to walk through the door that day, even though, of course, everyone should feel like that, that I belong and I'm among friends and that my kind of wardrobe is solved, as it were, that it's better than solved, that I'm being given that lovely experience of getting dressed every morning rather than it feeling like a burden or a challenge. And also that sort of what I think is really important for the customer if they come into the store or go online. Is that really implicit trust that the customer can sort of settle into what we have to say, that our staff or, you know, Emma, when it's Emma online during her online tutorials and so on, that they're experienced and have their own life story. So we introduce our customers to shapes, colours, fabrics that really work for them. And we also tell people when things aren't working, and we really do, and why. And so there's no flattery. Yeah, so I've learned so much as a customer about what works for me. And I just think that feeling that kind of confidence as you know, you want to feel confidence as you walk in as much as you do when you walk out of a store or a shopping experience or an online shopping experience. And I think that's what we want them to feel.
Yeah, and I think that really comes across. You know, I think you have quite a lot of customer testimonials on your website in particular. Mm. You can really see people say that they really trust and they really connect with the store teams. Yeah, that's huge. You know, it's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, and it's an interesting you raise that point, because they really do speak for us. And we often talk about, I don't know, a tagline or a definitive way of describing us. And obviously we do have those things. But the best way, of course, is when your customers say it for you. And they really do. That is really great to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can you tell me a little bit about what you're focusing on right now? Are you kind of looking at expanding your stores? Are you focusing more online? What are your big priorities at the moment?
Well, obviously, it's been a tough old 2 years. So a lot of what we're doing now is simply consolidating after 2 challenging years. But, you know, we're good. We're in a good place. We haven't just survived. We're thriving. So now I think what we're thinking about is scale and growth. And how we kind of plan to do that really is to reach more of the women that we know we can serve. I think women can spend their entire lives feeling that they don't look right, whether that's about shape or size or age or something else. And you add to that the struggles and changes that the years invariably brings to, you know, our health or our lives. And so many women are missing out on that, what I talked about, that kind of sheer joy of getting dressed every morning. So connecting with more of those customers is at the heart of the plan. At the product level, we're getting better and better at creating collections that our customers want. During the pandemic, we switched completely to our own brand label collection. And that was a huge thing to do at a difficult time. But in fact, the pandemic served us well and allowed us the breathing space to take stock, rethink, and in particular, make that transition. At a marketing level, we're looking at the full spectrum of channels, not least with Mortu's help. And for me personally, scaling Busby and Fox is an opportunity to apply some of the things that I learned first time around with Not in the High Street. And what I mean is that I know the preciousness of having the entire team in the same room when their connection with the brand is instinctive, and where interdepartmental communication is sort of personal and immediate rather than something that we need to construct. And if you're not careful, that does slip away as you grow. So I'm very determined to make sure that we hold on to that and grow in a very kind of intimate way that just holds on to our values, really.
Mm-hmm. And was it difficult for you, or maybe difficult is the wrong word, but how was it for you coming from a big, big business like Not on the High Street to, you know, a much smaller brand?
Yeah, we are smaller. We're probably 40 or so as a team. We certainly got a lot bigger, but we always had that small business feel. And of course, we were working with 5,000 small businesses. So small was our absolute world. So the transition was in many ways fairly seamless. The other thing is that I just love this stage of business, or this size of business. It's me and my kind of real happy place. And it's a lot of fun. You know, I went in and out of the office all the time. But one time recently at Easter, one of the team had bought everybody an Easter bunny. And it's just those kind of little touches that are only possible when you're small, that every single person on the team can get their Easter bunny from it. And we would do that as a company as well for our team. But the team, a member of the team can come in and go, you know what, I'm going to buy a bunny for everybody. And that's the sort of magic of being small and the relationship that you have with every single person So I think that's what's so special about being small.
Yeah, that's the magic of being small.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little bit earlier that your stores were, you know, doing quite well even during the pandemic. I think one thing that's quite interesting is that a lot of your stores are in holiday destinations like Exeter or, you know, smaller kind of market towns like Henley-on-Thames. How do you balance the off season when you don't have any tourists coming into those stores? How do you balance, you know, the productivity of those stores? How do you balance your store teams? Because that must be a little bit challenging.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yes, we are kind of even overperforming so far this year, which is great. And there's a kind of almost two cycles that we work with. But that is actually one of the great things about the business, because instead of the single cycle that most businesses have, we've got the sort of spring summer cycle that's sort of focused on our coastal stores. And then the sort of second half of the year cycle that's more around our online business and some of our other more urban stores. So actually what we do is have a strategy that embraces both and has the sort of the waves and cycles of both sort of interconnecting very healthily with each other. In order to do that, we've reimagined some of the core principles of fashion, really. Our collections debunk the notion of being tied to a season, and instead we focus on a sort of timeless, consciously designed collection of pieces that will serve you all year round and for many years to come. It's the ultimate easy to wear collection that you can layer up or pare down. And then that comes with a ton of ideas and guidance, which happens either very naturally in store as part of the shopping process or online, where customers can watch Emma in action in her weekly styling tutorials. So we do have the cycle that comes from our coastal towns, and that can be wild. You know, Salcombe in peak season is a sight to behold if you haven't already, but there's so much else going on everywhere and all the time that we're able to really make that work.
Yeah, and it's a tricky thing to manage, because a lot of business, I think, struggle a little bit with getting online and offline to work together. Sometimes they can be a little bit siloed and they're seen as two very just separate channels, but actually the customer experience bridges, you know, your online channels and your offline channels. So the fact that you can manage that and balance that is a testament, I think, to what you're doing. Yeah, because a lot of what you do is quite pioneering, you know, especially with Not on the High Street and so on. I'm really interested to hear what you think. What is the future for the small retailer, the small independent retailer? You know, what can they do to kind of fight off the big multinationals with deep pockets and big teams? Because we hear a lot about, you know, the death of the small retailer, but I have a feeling you're going to be quite optimistic about the future of small retail.
So transparent. Yeah, I just don't agree with that at all. From everything I see and know, women love nothing more than to walk into a store where they are known and they have a voice where they can say, I'd love to see more of this. And, you know, it's not a survey or a piece of data, it's a really personal point of view. And I think, you know, we're thriving on that. We're just absolutely thriving on the fact that we have stores in all sorts of different locations, but all of them with this kind of common thread, which is that they're busy, buzzy towns. That's where we are. Smaller towns or market towns or coastal towns, you know, never say never, but we don't really have any great interest in being in the big towns next to the multinationals. And I think the advantage that we have of being that sort of something special and powerful that comes from being small is more than, you know, more than enough to sort of fight our corner. And I think a lot of multinationals would dream of the level of customer engagement that we have, the feedback that we're able to sort of very quickly and in a very agile way incorporate into what we do, so we can be responsive. So yeah, we're very proud to be a business that's small enough to focus entirely on what matters to our customers, and yet big enough to create a fashion collection with our customers front of mind. Because we're seven stores and online, you know, we will continue to grow our stores as well. So we're able to marry the two and make that work for us and have a decent amount of leverage ourselves.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And it's lovely, I think, as well, you know, for the towns that have independent retailers like that as well. You know, sometimes you can go into some towns and they're just full of big brands and they all kind of look the same. But, you know, when you get the small, kind of quirky, interesting shops, it adds so much character and so much life to a town. So I'm also a big fan of independent retail. So it's great.
You must come visit.
I would love to. You know, I actually used to work in Exeter, so I know exactly where your shop is. I was looking at
lived in Devon, obviously.
I did, yeah, just briefly, just for a year. Yeah, but it was lovely. Really, really lovely part of the world. But yeah, I will definitely come visit. So my kind of final question, because we're slightly running out of time, but if you were to speak to somebody who is at maybe 4 or 5 years into their retail business and is looking for advice to scale sustainably, you know, without kind of losing that magic that they have, what would you say to them?
I think what I'd say is the same as I would always have said, you know, even when I was at Not in the High Street and working with those 5,000 small businesses that we did. I think first actually is to think big. Women in particular don't think big enough with their businesses. I mean, for example, when we first went for venture funding back in 2007, I know that around 6% of institutional investment went to female-led businesses. And now that is down to 2%. So if anything, women are thinking less big and less ambitious. So first of all, think big. I think second, make friends with data, but don't let it take over. You stay in charge. I have a bit of a mixed relationship with data. I'm a big believer, but I think the big advantage of multi-channel retail is the intimate relationship that you have with your customers, as we've talked about, and how you bake that into everything you do on and offline. So I think as far as data is concerned and science is concerned, I would say stick to your core values, what got you to where you are, and then hold on to your instincts. And then layer the science on top and the data, and that's where the magic happens. And then third, I'd say always put people first. I know everybody says that, but it is because it's true. Whether it's customers or your team, they're one and the same. They are just as important as each other. Our customers often come and work for us, and our staff are among our top customers, and they completely believe in the brand and the product. And you have to make that your goal on both sides. So getting it right for them and keeping that love alive on both sides should drive every decision and every hire. And I think if you lead with that, you really can't go far wrong.
That's brilliant. Sophie, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
It's a great pleasure to speak with you, Sarika.
That was Sophie Cornish, managing partner of Busby & Fox and founder of Not on the High Street. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Industry Leaders podcast. And don't forget that you can catch up on all our previous episodes on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for now. So for me, Sarah Boyle, and all of us at More2, take care and bye-bye.